Across America, it's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
Hey, great radio stations all over. JoePags.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, all right there. Also, the Blaze Radio Network. It is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Hopefully you're having a great weekend so far, even though it's just underway. Actually, some of you hear it on Sunday, so it might be halfway through. Glad to have you along for the ride. There's a lot to get to today. You're going to hear from Bill O'Reilly, his own self, on the program today. We're going to talk about the Ohio primary the other day, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and much more. Also, the media, the legacy media, and making it all about themselves. So we'll talk to Bill about all that. We also have Sean Spicer on today, a lot about Acosta in that one, and the treatment of Sarah Sanders compared to the treatment of him. I also get him to comment about Omarosa, and you're going to want to stick around for that because Omarosa has completely jumped the shark. I mean, if anybody believes anything she says at this point, that's on you. I'm just going to put it out there. So we've got them. We also have Dinesh and his wife, Debbie D'Souza. His brand new film called Death of a Nation is in movie theaters now. Saw it the other day. Amazing. Amazing. You got to go and see this for sure. Yeah, we've got a lot going on. It is a weekend nearing the middle of August. I got to be honest. I'm not sure when NFL preseason starts. I'm not. I mean, it seems early to me, but it started last week. It seems early to me. By last week, this past week. Used to be extremely knowledgeable about the NFL. Are you ready for some football? Sorry, it wasn't very good. But I used to be so excited, man. I couldn't wait for the season to start. Going to be great. Going to watch my Dolphins do something this year they haven't done in a long time. They're going to actually win a game. And then the whole kneeling thing started. Stopped watching. Now, what's interesting is there are people who really don't believe me when I say that. And I got to be honest with you. I really don't care what you believe. And I don't mean you generally, because most of you get it. But those of you who are like, yeah, well, whatever. It's just for the radio. No, I haven't watched football in 2 years. Two full seasons, I have watched the two Super Bowls, however. Well, why would you do that? That's stupid. No, it's really not. It's a family tradition in my house. We have really crappy food, snack food, once a year. We watch the commercials. So we have watched the last two Super Bowls, have not watched any regular season nor postseason football other than that. Haven't watched ESPN for two full years now. Unless, and I'm always going to be honest with you, my Spurs are playing on ESPN, then I have to watch the network. But I don't watch SportsCenter. I used to set my clock by. A lot of you men and women out there, boys and girls, you set your clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, depending on what time zone you're in. You watch ESPN for SportsCenter. You get your full day's worth of sports in an hour. Bam! All caught up. Haven't watched it in 2 years. And the reason why is it's more than just the fact that every story they were doing at that point, maybe they've changed or maybe it's just as bad, was about some far left-wing liberal purpose. The expose on the girl taking steroids because she believes she's a boy wrestling other girls and annihilating them. And that was some story of empowerment and really identifying with who you really are. When in essence, it was just a girl taking steroids to beat other girls in wrestling. Or the gay lacrosse team. Another expose. Or give Caitlyn Jenner, Bruce Jenner, an award for bravery or something. What? So at that point, for me, ESPN was no longer necessary. If I wanted to find out about sports, I'd have to find another outlet. And if there were a smart network, and maybe there is one, I haven't watched this Fox Sports 1, I don't know if that's any good. But if there were a smart network, they'd come out and just do sports again. ESPN has become a very, very liberal political outlet. But the one thing that made me stop watching ESPN was 2 years ago, Stan Verrett, who is an anchor, a host on there. I think he still is. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be. He's very good. But he decided to somehow, in the same sentence, talk about his grandfather, and Stan happens to be black, his grandfather fighting World War II and being segregated or something, and Colin Kaepernick kneeling for the flag. He actually was suggesting it was the same thing. And at that point, I called him out on Twitter, and he came back at me sarcastically, whatever. And I said, Stan, until you just start doing sports again, I can't watch. No reason I should waste my time watching and waiting for you to say the next liberal thing. Nobody cares about your opinion, first of all. That's not the job. And secondly, you're dead wrong. Just dead wrong. It's actually embarrassing. And I would think disrespectful to your grandfather to compare him and his sacrifice and what he lived through with Colin Kaepernick, who was making like $14 million a year. So I stopped watching ESPN in the hopes that somebody would say, you know what? ESPN actually said they're just going to do sports again. Because then I would like to go back. It's a great network when it comes to sports. But the whole kneeling for the flag thing, it'll never make sense because the reasons they're giving are invalid. Who are you to say they're invalid? I can already hear you lefties out there commenting as we go. And feel free to call in at 800-501-7080. 800-501-7080. The fact is, sports brings us together. Used to. Didn't matter who your coworker, you know, voted for in the last election or what issues you disagree on when it comes to politics and the way our community should look and act and feel. Because if you're a Dolphin fan, you're a friend of mine. If you're a Spurs fan or a Yankees fan, you're a friend of mine. Didn't matter what you thought about anything else, whether we liked the same foods, whether we liked the same people. None of that mattered. What mattered was we had one goal that we were unified on, and that's our team winning. I go to the gym most days, 4 days a week at least. And when I walk in, and I see people of all backgrounds, ethnicities, races, genders, and we don't talk about politics, although many of them know what I do for a living, because that's divisive in many ways. What we talk about is, did you see that game last night? What we talk about is, did you see that touchdown? What we talk about, did you see that dunk? It unites us. Sports does have a very high profile, very important role in any community. Look at how nuts the people in Europe and South America get over their freaking soccer. They go nuts. And it's starting to happen here in North America. It actually does happen a lot in Mexico, which is North America. So I decided this offseason, because the NFL actually said there would be fines and punishments for teams whose players did not stand for the national anthem. You had two choices: stay in the locker room and come out after the anthem, or if you're on the sideline, you're going to stand. So this is not a First Amendment issue. Never has been, never will be. This is an issue of rules and regulations being put out by employers. Your employer has the right to tell you how to dress, has the right to tell you what time to show up for work and what time you can leave, has the right to tell you how to act, you know, what job you are required to do to receive your paycheck. For some reason, NFL players don't think that applies to them. They think, I'll kneel if I want. First Amendment issue. I'll kneel if I want. It's my right to express myself. Yeah, you have the right to protest. You just don't have the right to do it on my dime. You don't have the right to do it while wearing my uniform. You don't have the right to do it while on my sideline waiting to play a game for a team that I own. You have the right to follow my rules, or you have the privilege to leave. Nobody's got a gun to your head making you play for that team. Nobody's got a gun to your head making you accept those millions of dollars. So this offseason, the NFL had enough. It saw game to game, some games were 36% lower ratings than previous years. It was a Thursday night game last year. When you lose that kind of percentage, you're losing big dollars in advertising. Networks had to pay back advertisers for low ratings. Because when you buy advertising, I guess, during NFL games, you're guaranteed a certain number of eyeballs seeing your product. If that's not happening, you get some of your money back. The NFL was going to fix it. Along with, for some reason, hiring a couple of male cheerleaders, which I just don't understand. They decided they're going to fix it. You could stay in the locker room, or you could stand for the anthem. Well, my team, the Miami Dolphins, I believe, played Tampa Bay the other night. Didn't watch a snap, didn't watch a lick of it. I was actually working. My show is 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern during the week. The Joe Pags Show. Get it on your station. But I'm starting to see a trend on Twitter, the Miami Dolphins. I'm like, yeah, my Dolphins playing. And again, I'm like, I'm going to come back. I miss football. I'd like to watch it this year. And it's trending because a couple of idiots, a couple of players whose names I'd never heard before, I don't know who's on my team anymore, decided they would kneel. And they knelt for the national anthem. Some reports said they had a fist in the air. Now, what exactly is it you think you're accomplishing? A, there's supposed to be a rule that you can't do that anymore. The NFL, as far as I know, has not punished them one iota. There's no fine, there's no penalty, there's no suspension. So I guess all the offseason crap was bunk. But what exactly is it that you're accomplishing other than pushing away a lifelong fan like me and like millions of you? Has there been any less violence in Chicago because of the protests? And by the way, keep in mind, they are protesting the flag, and they're protesting the nation, and they're protesting the anthem of our nation, and they're protesting the sacrifice that millions and millions and millions of Americans have signed up for by defending the Constitution and our freedoms and liberties in our military. They are, in fact, disrespecting those men and women. They are. Doesn't matter what they say. They are. But it's solved nothing. It's achieved nothing. I mean, you have to be smart enough to know that what you're doing is achieving nothing other than pushing people away. It's not like people said, I never watched football before, but because of those protests, I'm watching it now. I can't wait to go watch some football because I want to see them with their fists in the air and taking a knee during the national anthem. They're not building an audience that they didn't otherwise have, and they're pushing an audience away that they had. You're making millions of dollars to play a game. Nobody but nobody tunes in to hear or see your political view on anything. You're making millions of dollars to entertain people and take them away from politics and the stresses of their daily life. And you think that you're actually doing something. Well, in the off season, did you go and meet with police? And did you go and meet with the community? Did you bring the police and the community together because of your fame and your stardom? Or were you all about yourself in the off season? And now that it's on my time, you're going to start kneeling again. You know, I've got a wonderful local cable company that provides the cable for my house and the internet and so on. I also have DirecTV. I have DirecTV for one reason, for the NFL Sunday ticket. I actually paid for it the last 2 years and didn't watch it, didn't use it. Because I was hoping that mid-season, both seasons, the NFL would say, not one player will kneel again. If they do, they'll be suspended or fired. And it never happened. This year, I was going to watch it. I'll be canceling it on Monday. I'm done. I've given you... This will be the start of the third year to fix this. You don't want to fix it? I don't want to know about football. NFL football anyway. 800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. JoePags.com for all the social media. We're coming right back. Glad to have you. It is the weekend with Joe Pags. Thanks a lot for stopping by. Love having you along for the ride. Make sure you stop by joepags.com, joepags.com, and click on Facebook. Once you're there, click on Send Message, and that's going to sign you up for Facebook chat messages. You're like, well, what does that mean? Well, you know, you've got your friends and your connections on Facebook. You could send each other messages, right? A Facebook message. You'll get a Facebook message from me 5 or 6 days a week. I sent one out right before the program today with who the guests are going to be, what topics we're going to talk about, and then you could be engaged that way. Also, ways to listen. Again, joepags.com. Click on Facebook. Click on send message, and then you'll be signed up automatically to get these messages when I send them out. I don't spam you. I'm not advertising any product to you in these messages. Just saying, hey, the show's on. Here's where you can watch. Here's where you can listen. Also, click on Twitter. I tend to live tweet during my programs, all right? So make sure you stop there. You can live tweet, and on the breaks, I'll try to react. Sometimes, even when I'm on the air, I'll try to react. Instagram, more of the gym photos, maybe some family stuff, my dogs, whatever. That's what's happening on Instagram. And also, there's a live stream box there. When the show is live, you'll see the live stream there. You'll see my face and my big fat head. And after the show is over, that live stream will replay as if it's a DVR. So, again, joepags.com, show topics, sign up for the email, do all that stuff right there. Talking about the NFL, I will not be coming back this season unless something happens between now, and I'm doing this on Saturday morning, now and in Monday, where the NFL says these players have been fined X amount of dollars, these teams have been fined, these players have been suspended. Something now has to happen. If you went to your job every day and broke the rules of the job every day, you would not only be fined, you probably would just be fired out of box. Have a nice day. Don't need you working here. Who do you think you are telling me how you're going to act at my place of employee? They're privileged and lucky to be able to work for that job or that company or that team. Why would you keep on kneeling and breaking the rules? It's the same as showing up wearing the opposing team's uniform. Well, it's my First Amendment right to do it. Sure is, but you don't have a First Amendment right to work here. Let me go to the phone lines. It's going to be Dee, who is in Kentucky. Dee, what's going on? Hi.
Hey, what's going on, Joe?
Living the dream. Talk to me.
I was listening to your comments there, and what I was thinking is what we have is a lack of leadership. The leadership is exacerbating the problem with this NFL thing.
Right.
If there's a reason why they are kneeling down, if the leaders, and I'm mainly speaking of the president in this.
Oh, I thought you meant the leaders of the team. So you're actually going to call in and complain about the president? They started kneeling when Obama was the president. You realize that, right?
Oh, when was this? Because I don't recall that.
In 2016. That's when they started kneeling, 2 years ago.
Well,
who was the president then? I forget.
Then I will blame that leadership, too, because you should meet and find out why they're kneeling and try to address that situation.
Well, listen, at least you're consistent, and I appreciate that. You do hear the music. I got to run. At least you're consistent. That's cool. If you're just going to blame Trump and pretend like Obama didn't do anything, we weren't going to be able to have a good conversation. When you say leadership, I thought you meant team ownership. Quick break here. We're back with Bill O'Reilly on the weekend.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
All right, great radio stations everywhere. JoePags.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email. It's all right there. Thanks for stopping by. Also, the live video feed. It is The Weekend with Joe Pags. 1-800-501-7080. 1-800-501-7080. Or you could send me an email or a message over on the social media when you stop by JoePags.com. Got a chance to talk to Bill O'Reilly this week. We talked on Monday. We got together again on Wednesday. After the Ohio primary, the special election, whatever it was. And it was interesting because the media basically was saying the Democrat didn't win, but really did win. And the Republican did win, but really didn't win or something. We also talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We talk about the media and its hit job and anybody that it disagrees with. Bill, I appreciate it. Bill is legendary. Go to BillO'Reilly.com. Check out all of his stuff. Bill, I appreciate you coming back on. How are you?
Good, Joe. Nice to speak with you again.
Make sure you stop by Bill's website. It's BillO'Reilly.com. BillO'Reilly.com for his No Spin News program. It is a hit. Everybody who's gone and checked it out has loved it. Also, check out the premium membership there. Interesting happenings in Ohio last night. I guess this is sort of the way of politics in our country, Bill, and I want you to give me your take on this if you don't mind. But if the Democrats only lose by a little bit, they won somehow. And if the Republican wins, they still lost. Did I get it right?
Yeah, the media spins it that way. And then President Trump spins it that the Republican candidate was so far behind. Then he went there to campaign for him and suddenly he rocketed. The truth is that Americans basically are watching right now. They're not reacting. This is very important. Yeah. So you have a special election in Ohio 12, the 12th district. Not that many people turned out. About 200,000. Not many. And the Republican won, but now he has to run again in November because he's replacing another Republican who resigned to become a business person. And he's running against the same guy, O'Connor. So the race will be in November, and then we'll see. And I fully expect the Republicans to win in this district if the economy stays where it is right now. But what the press doesn't care about, because what they want to do is root for anything bad to happen to Donald Trump. So if Democrats get elected, that's bad for Trump. And hopefully he'll be impeached in the House if the Republicans lose the House. That's what the press wants. You can imagine all the money that will be earned by cable news and the network news if Donald Trump is impeached. Buckets of money. All right, tens of millions of dollars. So just on an economics, they're rooting for Trump to get impeached. Now, the president knows that he has got to keep the House of Representatives. The Senate looks like it'll stay Republican. I think Claire McCaskill out in Missouri is going to lose. A Republican will take that seat. But he knows he has to keep the House. And that's going to be razor thin. But nobody, Joe, can predict what's going to happen in August. No one. So final point, if you're sitting there on your butt listening to people predict races on cable television, you're a moron. They don't know anything. Go out and talk to a four-year-old in the neighborhood. That kid will know more than these people do. There you go.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Nobody else has ever said that. It's Bill O'Reilly, BillO'Reilly.com, of course, that the media has a vested interest in impeachment hearings. Even if they don't want them to be impeached, they want them to be because of the buckets of money. I never even thought about that before. I think that's prescient. I think you're absolutely right about that.
All of the calculations on cable news in particular are made about money. So MSNBC. Yeah. It's a liberal network, okay? And NBC News runs it. But does NBC News like MSNBC? No, not particularly. They're embarrassed by it. Does it make money? Some money, some, but not Fox News money, okay? But if there's impeachment, they'll triple their billings. So NBC is just sitting there going, hey, that's what we're in business to do, not report the news, not tell the truth, not even to seek the truth. We're in a business to make money, so we'll put these people here, and hopefully it'll happen.
You get the No Spin News from BillO'Reilly.com. Make sure you stop by there. This Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been saying the most outlandish things. Things like, we're going to turn this seat red, which makes no sense. That's not what she's trying to do. That if you have two jobs, you somehow made the unemployment rate lower, which, of course, isn't how it works. So every candidate that she backed, and everybody thought she was the new up-and-coming star, lost yesterday. Does the Democrat Party, Bill, now run away from her? Or do they keep on trying to hang their, or you know, hitch their wagon to this woman because she's young and cute?
You know, I got to tell you, Joe, I just think she's great. I just think this woman is great. I do. I think a 28-year-old woman, okay, who decides to run against a fat cat congressman who couldn't care less about his district, all right, the Irish guy who lost to her, who goes out and works her butt off and wins the primary. And now she thinks that she's Winston Churchill, okay?
She does.
Let's go. Here we go. We're going to take everything back. Now, I like her. I like the work ethic. I like the ambition. But the truth is, and I don't say this with any arrogance at all, that she doesn't know anything. She doesn't know anything. Now, that puts her on a par with most politicians in Washington. None of them know anything. All right? She's 28. She's got a chance. If she wants to come over to my house, I'll give her a tutorial, and I'll teach her a little history and a little economics and a little political science. But does she know anything? No. She doesn't know anything. She was elected because the people in the district go, the Irish guy doesn't care about us. She's working her butt off. We're going to vote for her. And if she can get us some free stuff, we'll be happy. That's it.
That's exactly what it's turning out to be, because it's certainly not because of her economics degree that she has from Boston College or something. I don't know how she got it, because she doesn't seem to understand anything about it. But is it Boston U? Is that what it was?
I think it was Boston U, but I could be wrong. But I felt, because I went to Boston U, and I thought that she was one of my fellow terriers. But I'm not 100% sure.
I think you're probably right. I mean, but you seem to have learned something there, Bill. I'm not so sure that she did.
No,
it's Bill O'Reilly.
I didn't learn
BillO'Reilly.com.
I learned in the School of Hard Knocks, Joe. That's where I learned.
I got you, brother. Hey, but before we run out of time, I got to ask you, allegedly, and this poll has to be bunk, it has to be absolute BS, but allegedly 43% of Republicans would be okay with President Trump shutting down the media. A, can you possibly believe that poll? And B, nobody wants, people like you and me, we don't want anybody shutting the media down, do we?
No, and the poll is, you know, one of these, again, get attention polls. There are Americans who don't want to hear opinions other than their own.
Yeah.
The number at about 35%, maybe 40% at this point. There are. I mean, and they're both sides.
It's a lot.
Conservatives and liberals. We don't want to hear anything but what we believe. And if you say something we don't like you. So that's a growing part of the country. And that's based upon intolerance, bitterness, that kind of thing. But any sane person in this country knows that we can't have a dictator in the White House shutting down press organizations he or she doesn't like. I mean, that's insane. So I don't believe the poll, but I do believe there are people who don't want to hear opposite opinions.
Well, I've got to say this. The president doesn't appear to be shutting anybody down. He just appears to have an opinion. Why is it that the left doesn't think he can have an opinion on the people that are casting opinion on him every day? That's weird.
Well, it's the way he frames his opinion that the people, the press is a danger to the people. I said on BillO'Reilly.com yesterday that the press is my enemy. They're certainly my enemy. For more than 20 years on the Fox News Channel, I was attacked every single day. And what was I attacked for? Doing the best cable news program in America, being honest on the air, which I was. We don't have to retract any stories. We had to retract one in 20 years, and that was based on a mistake made on an internet thing. But every day I was attacked by the media. The left-wing media didn't want me, because I was successful, saying anything. So those people are my enemy. They're my enemy, and they're harming Americans. So when Trump said that, I knew exactly where he was coming from. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because they do it to him. They want him out. They don't want him to modify his policies or improve or anything like that. They want him gone. And they wanted me gone. And so they're the enemy.
And the best way that you do it is you generalize that Bill O'Reilly is all of these things at once, or Donald Trump is all of these things, or said all of these things, and none of that was true. Bill, I know that you're pressed for time. I appreciate you taking the time again. You can get all the great insight Bill has to offer by checking out his No Spin News program. I'm addicted to it now, over at BillO'Reilly.com. While you're there, make sure you check out the BillO'Reilly.com premium membership. It's a great deal, and we're always very happy to have Bill's talking points air right here on Newsmax TV several times a week. Bill, thanks a million. Appreciate you.
All right, Joe, always good talking to you. Thank you.
We really appreciate him taking the time. It was great to catch up with him, and I think that his insights are very, very right on. Your thoughts on what you just heard? It's 800-501-7080, 800-501-7080, joepags.com for all the social media. We're coming right back. Stay here. Great to have you. It is The Weekend with Joe Pags, 1-800-501-7080, 800-501-7080, joepags.com. Click on all the social media there, whichever one you use the most. Go and follow me there, and we can connect about show stuff right there. It's interesting because when you go to Facebook and send me a message, it signs you up for the chat messages. I just had somebody write me a message saying, it's way too hard to find your show. I'm going to have to find a different one. But the messages that I send out actually say, click here to hear the show. Press this button to hear the show. If that's hard, I don't know what to do. I don't have a better answer. And then when I wrote back and said, it's not hard, just click the link. You don't have to be condescending. You don't have to be rude to me. People are perpetually the victim, and I don't get it. I really don't. It's 800-501-7080, your thoughts on what O'Reilly had to say, and certainly your thoughts on the NFL players. I'm telling you, they don't know why they're doing it, but they just think that somehow they're right in doing it. And if their employer doesn't hold them to task and say, look, you have to stop doing this, you're hurting our business, or you're going to be fired, they're never going to stop. It's going to continue. And the NFL viewership is not going to increase because of this. It's going to continue to decrease. Let me go to the phone line, say hi to Joe on line two. Joe, what's going on in Kentucky?
To be alive listening to you in WLAP out of Lexington, Kentucky. Great to hear you every weekend. Wish I
Thanks,
had
brother.
You during the week.
Yeah, I do too.
But one thing I was going to say is Jim Brown, I'm showing my age, Jim Brown, who played for Cleveland when they actually had good football teams in the 60s.
They did.
Was an activist. He marched with Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And what his take on these players now, he says, if you want to be an activist, you do it on your own time like I did. You're out there to entertain people. You do what you're supposed to do. Play football. Be an activist on your own time.
Yeah, and he actually said, I would never kneel for the anthem,
right?
Ever. And he said, I will never. And he doesn't think these players should be doing it either. Now, why not look at a guy like that? And look, they're looking at Colin Kaepernick as their mentor for some weird reason. The guy's just a dumb guy. Why not look at Jim Brown as your mentor and say, let me do what he did. He actually made an impact, and he was a great player as well.
And you got it straight. And I loved hearing everything Bill O'Reilly had to say. And I'm sorry, this Cortez woman. Everything I've heard come out of her mouth since she's been elected just dumbfounds me that how this woman has a chance to be a U.S. representative. It's just like, whoa, it blew.
Well, she's probably going to be the U.S. representative, which is interesting. Although Crawley is trying now to still keep his job by doing it some different way. But yeah, no, I don't know, maybe it would be a good thing because it really does expose the left in this country. And it's either lack of intelligence or just plain old ignorance. What she's saying doesn't make any sense. I appreciate you, Joe. Now, let me just reiterate it. And you can't believe you're cutting down a woman who's Hispanic. No, I'm cutting down somebody because of the word she's actually said. She told a reporter the unemployment rate is so low because people have two jobs. Well, the vast majority of people don't have two jobs, first of all. And people who having two jobs probably would make the unemployment rate go up, not down. If I have 10 jobs, I'm still just one employed person. So the number of jobs I have doesn't change my impact on the unemployment rate, unless I can make a case that because I have two jobs, that stops the guy next door from having one of my jobs. So if anything, it might see the unemployment rate go up, which it's not. It certainly doesn't make the unemployment rate go down. That's just dumb. Mark is in New Hampshire. Mark, what's up?
Hi, Joe.
Hey.
I don't know if people remember, but back during the George W. Bush's second campaign to get reelected, he was doing a tour and he went to the Verizon Center in Manchester, and Kurt Schilling, who with the bloody sock won the World Series for the Boston Red Sox,
right,
was told by the management that he could not participate in a Bush campaign on his own personal time. And if they can be that directive to a Republican as a Democrat team, why can't someone just say, as a team owner, you can't play if you're going to kneel?
Well, I didn't know that about Curt Schilling. I'm not surprised because he is a conservative guy. But you're right. I mean, the question is valid. The teams, every franchise
you can
has
check
the right
my
to.
On that. I don't need to.
I don't think you're lying to me. But I'm going to add on to what you said. There is no reason why the individual NFL franchises can't tell these players, you're wearing my uniform on my field for my team, and I'm giving you millions of my dollars. You have to follow my rules. They can do that, just like the NFL, the corporation itself, can say you must follow these rules. They don't want to because they don't want to be called racist.
Right.
All right, brother, I appreciate you. Open line now at 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080. Yeah, the people trying to make this about race, well, you're only attacking them because they're black. You're only calling them SOBs, President Trump, because they're black. Well, the vast majority of the NFL players are black. I think it's 70% at this point. The vast majority of that 70% is not kneeling. Nobody's calling not kneeling players SOBs or saying they're doing something wrong. They're only, and we're only talking about those who are kneeling. So are the black players who are standing a different race than the black players that are kneeling? I'm just asking a silly question. Wayne, what's going on? About a minute. Let's go.
Hello?
You're on the air. About a minute, Wayne. Let's go.
Oh, hey, thank you very much. I just wanted to say thank you so much for your analysis of the NFL. I quit watching it 2 years ago myself, and I was a longtime fan. That Colin Kaepernick nonsense, I just decided I don't miss it. I'm not going to watch it. And this is a guy who he and his wife went to their honeymoon, went to the Steeler training camp way back in the 70s. So I've completely given up on him. I see stuff like Aaron Rodgers saying, well, it's not about the flag or the military. Well, if that's the case, then why not take a knee right before kickoff? Why do it during the national anthem? So,
why not? I tell you what, Aaron, take the snap from the center on first or second down, take a knee and put your fist in the air. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. If you want to make it not about the flag or the military or the country, then do that. But, there are other places to do it, and it's nonsense what they're doing now. And they're losing fans. And like I say, last 2 years, I haven't watched one down of it. I've gone golfing on Sunday afternoons,
right,
and I don't miss it at all.
But I got to run, Wayne. I appreciate your comments. Thank you. Yeah, he's right. You know, they're not doing it when it's going to hurt them financially or hurt their team. They're only doing it during the anthem. Quick break. Stay here.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Across America, it's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
Great radio stations all over. JoePags.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, all right there. The Blaze Radio Network. It is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Lots going on. We still have to come. Sean Spicer, the former press secretary for this White House, the White House of Donald J. Trump. Interesting comments on Jim Acosta accosting Sarah Sanders recently in one of these press briefings. Well, you say right now the media is not the enemy of the people. We deserve better than that. We work hard. No. And Sarah Sanders actually just read off a litany of what's happened to her since she's been on the job. And, for Acosta to always make it about him, I guess we're not surprised anymore, but that's not the job. And Spicer and I talk about that. We also talk about Omarosa. Omarosa is turning on the guy that gave her fame, fortune, and notoriety. That's what she's doing. She's attempting to profit from that hatred that she's purveying. It's very strange to me. So we'll talk about that as well. We've got people who want to talk about the players kneeling, want to talk about what Bill O'Reilly had to say last hour with me right here on the program. There's another story that we'll get to with Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott a little bit later on, a story out of New Mexico where there was some compound, some guy allegedly, according to reports, a third-party report, was training young people to be school shooters. Some radical Islamic idiot who has ties to the blind sheikh, this guy Rahman, who was involved in the World Trade Center bombing in 1993. This is happening in the middle of the desert in New Mexico. Now, this should be the biggest story on planet Earth. It should be the biggest story for our media. It should be the biggest story that's talked about constantly, top of the newscast, about 10 minutes a show. It's not, but it should be. We'll get into that with Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott in just a bit. I'm going to wrap up the NFL talk, but I've got a couple of people been holding, so I definitely want to hear from them. Let me make it as clear as I can. They are kneeling during the national anthem on purpose. They are doing it while the flag is being celebrated on purpose. They've chosen that time on purpose. Those who are doing it are either ignorant or really do believe that police officers go to work every day, suit up, and they're looking to go shoot a black person, especially a black male. They really do believe that, some of them. It's a matter of just not being very smart. It's a matter of being unintelligent or a matter of ignoring the basic facts that are available. There was a professor at Harvard, happens to be black, his name is Fryer, who did a study on police shootings. And he himself said, I was surprised to find that there is no preference or no higher number of black people being shot by police than white or any other ethnicity. He was surprised by that. It's a real study done by a guy at a very far left-wing school, and a guy happens to be black. So why not educate yourself first? And then if you still feel as though you need to protest, wait till you're not about to be my entertainment for a Sunday and protest on your time off. Go to City Hall and protest. Go to the White House and protest. Actually do a protest. Don't screw up my viewing on a Sunday. And by the way, those who take it to the nth degree and say something stupid like the NFL or the team owners are slave masters and plantation owners, and the players are the slaves, you can kiss my ass. That actually denigrates and sullies what actual slaves went through. And not only in this country, slavery abounded around the globe. And it was slavery of people of all races and colors and backgrounds and ethnicities. I mean, there is a level of pseudo-intelligent ignorance right now, especially among sports stars, that just, it makes my face hurt. There's a new player for the San Antonio Spurs, I'm not even going to name the guy, who on 4th of July actually tweeted that he doesn't celebrate 4th of July, something about know your history. Here's a guy who thinks that 4th of July is invalid because there was still slavery in the country. You realize that during the first 4th of July, there's a really good chance there were black slave owners then. The first slave owner in this country was a black man. But if you're indoctrinated to believe that blacks were nothing and were only slave, all slaves were black, all black people were slaves, you have learned incorrect history. At the time of the Civil War, there were black slave owners. Many of them. It's not that hard to figure it out. But I guess it's easier to tweet out something stupid. You tweet out something stupid, other stupid people applaud you and hold you up on high, then you delete the tweet and pretend like it never happened. And the local media talks about how great you are and how the community is accepting you and loves you. No, we're really not. So listen, I'm willing to have the debate. I'm willing to talk about sports and politics and the intersection therein, as long as we're coming from a place of honesty. If you're saying the players aren't kneeling to disrespect the flag and the country, you're not being honest. If you're saying police go to work every day looking to shoot a black person, you're not being honest. If you say black people are being systematically shot and killed by police officers while everybody else is just allowed to just go on about their lives and not worry about it, you're not being honest. And this never should have been on the football field to begin with. People talk about Muhammad Ali protesting the Vietnam War. What, did you think he had the right to do that, Pags? Yep. He sure did. Was he right or wrong? I don't know. But here's a guy that lost his career, his riches, and his championship because of something he believed. Here's a guy that never stopped in the middle of the ring to do the black power fist and to talk about Malcolm X and his beliefs. Nope, got in the ring, entertained on the way to the ring, spoke fast and rhymed and did all sorts of stuff to keep you engaged, got in the ring and kicked somebody's ass. That was the job. These football players don't seem to get what the job is. You have fame, notoriety, money, success, a better life than you ever could have imagined because of people like me. We bought your tickets. We bought your broadcast. We went and patronized the sponsors. It's kind of dumb that you're telling me that what you think about politics is more important than my viewership. Earl is in Kentucky. Earl, what's going on? Hi.
Yeah, about the NFL again. Remember a guy named Hank Williams Jr.?
Yeah.
Who lost his gig with Monday Night Football.
Right.
Because of something he said during the middle of the week, not even involved in the game, about Barack Obama.
Yeah, he talked about why is John Boehner golfing with Barack Obama. That's like somebody golfing with Hitler, something like that. Yeah.
But he lost his job for it.
He did.
It's a double standard. Now, everyone has the right to freedom of speech.
Right.
On your own time, but not on somebody else's time. I can't go into my employer and start raving about the company and not expect to be, terminated.
And that appears to be common sense, but it's even more than that. The Supreme Court has actually ruled that, yes, employers have the right to restrict your First Amendment rights when you're on the job.
Right.
It's settled law.
But you're right. It's no common sense in America anymore. We have too many people who went to college to play football but never went to class.
We agree. I'm with you. A lot of these guys skated through college because they were the star player. I won't name him because he never did anything in the NBA, but there was a guy that was going to a university where I used to work, near where I used to work. I didn't work at the university. I was a TV news anchor. And he was the star player on the team, on the basketball team. And he was a freshman or a sophomore, and he wasn't going to class. And one of his classmates that ended up working with me later said, "Why don't you go to class?" He said, "I'm only going to be here for a couple of years. I'm not worried about it." He was right. There a couple of years, went to the NBA draft, didn't do much there, probably made a good chunk of money up front. I think he's a broadcaster now or something. But we're talking about college. Many of them, most of them, getting scholarships. Some are stories where they didn't, where they had to work for it. And they just aren't learning much. But they're incredible athletes. They've been gifted by God with that prowess. I think they're smart enough to learn if they wanted to, but why do that when you can party, play a game, and then get a big contract when you get out? And then once you get that big contract, your thank you to the fans that made you who you are is to kneel down during the anthem. I mean, it's not logical. 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080. What is Omarosa saying? Who is Omarosa, and why should we care? When we come back on the weekend. Oh, yeah, glad to have you. It's the weekend with Joe Pags, 1-800-501-7080. JOEPAGS.com. stop by there. If you haven't been to my website before, there'll be a little pop-up to sign up for the email. I sent the email out today. Also, while you're there, click on Facebook. Send me a message. You'll be signed up for the messages. Twitter, we live tweet during the program, and we're building a bit of a following there. I wish that there were just one social media. A lot of you don't like Facebook because Zuckerberg did this or that, so I'm on Twitter. A lot of you don't like Twitter, so I'm on Facebook. Instagram is a different thing. I don't generally do the same things on Instagram as I do on the other social media. So whichever one is, gets you going, feel free to go check it out. I have Snapchat, never use it, don't know how to use it, don't get it, don't understand why it's a big deal. It's actually kind of dumb to me. So I don't really use Snapchat. I don't really like the interface and the fact that they started this whole put up a video or a picture and it disappears in a certain amount of time. I just think that's all very sneaky and very weird. But anyway, having said that, I've got the social media there. Make sure you stop by. Also, you can click on Find a Station, and that's going to open up your email app, and you just send me your zip code or your city. I'll let you know if we have a station. We've got 110 stations now, Monday through Friday, on the Joe Pags Show. And there are a ton of stations that you're hearing me on right now that I'm not on during the week because their schedules are tied up and there's frankly no room. And I get that. But you could always let them know that you'd like to hear the program during the week. That'd be great. All right. I want to talk about Omarosa. When she was on The Apprentice, and many of you didn't know that she was on The Apprentice, many of you might not have even known who Omarosa was until this week when she was trending all over the place. But we watched The Apprentice religiously in the Pags house. My wife and kids and I liked watching it. A lot of friends of mine liked watching it. It was a good show. You had this guy, you know, the Trump, the Donald, who was going to walk into this elaborate boardroom and sit down and tell people, you're fired. It was a very good show. Now, reality TV is not reality TV. That's not true. Reality TV is unscripted drama. Reality TV is just a television show that's produced, and you're not handed lines to say. You're like, well, no, it's reality. No, it's not. It is not reality to show up at a desert island with 18 strangers. It's not reality to show up at Trump Tower and try to do tasks for Donald Trump. It's not reality to go and sing in front of three singing stars and try to get a record deal. That's not reality. That's a television show. It's a production. But you're not told what to say, so it's unscripted. Omarosa was on The Apprentice before they started doing all the Celebrity Apprentice stuff. It was actually just regular people that would show up and apply, and either they would make it or they wouldn't. Omarosa was a very interesting character from the beginning because she's attractive. She's somebody who appeared as though she was going to do very well, and although has what appears to be a pretty honest-looking face, is just a freaking liar. Now, I don't say this because she's attacking the president. I said this then, too. And I've actually said it when she was part of his team. Wow. She was just a big, fat liar on The Apprentice. Lied her ass off and threw everybody under the bus at every boardroom and kept on winning. She didn't win the show, but she kept on winning. Like, man, that takes skill to be that good a liar and keep on getting away with it, knowing that they're going to air the actual show, showing the video of you completely contradicting what you're saying in the boardroom. But she kept on doing well. And then you hear that Donald Trump has her on his team as he's running for president. And then she's like the liaison with the African-American community or something when he becomes president. And then was unceremoniously fired or let go or pushed out or something in December of 2017. Suddenly she's got a book called Unhinged. In the book, she talks about how, allegedly, I haven't read it, I won't read it, but the reports on it say, she says that something had to be repeated to him 5 times, 10 times, so that he would remember it, that there was some sort of a separation or delusion there. And then this past week, she leaks out, and again, she's not saying it, but she's leaking it out through people, that she has secret recordings of the President of the United States. So she's secretly recording the guy in the White House. I don't even know if that's legal, to be honest with you. And then, just yesterday or the day before, she starts trending again. Now she alleges he said the N-word. And then She alleges that she called a, I think Kellyanne Conway's husband, who's part Filipino, a flip. I've never heard that term used for somebody. I know how to flip a burger or flip somebody off. And allegedly, he called him a goo-goo. Never heard of a goo-goo as an insult for somebody Asian either. I've heard of G-O-O-K, but and that was what I believe some of our soldiers were calling the people they were fighting in Vietnam. So I don't know where she's getting this stuff, but then she backed off of the, I heard him say the N-word, to now she's saying, somebody told me they heard him say the N-word, and now that person's saying, I never told her anything of the sort. That's an absolute fabrication. And Kellyanne Conway's husband, whoever it is, Conway, said, yeah, no, he never called me anything like that. I don't know what she's talking about. So here's the basic question on Omarosa. She wasn't to be believed on The Apprentice. It was on videotape, her lying every single episode. Every episode. Then Trump adds her to the team, and I'm thinking, well, he knows something I don't know. He's an extreme success. He must have known that she was lying on the show, but it's okay because it was for the show. She's a real person, and for a long time, she stood up and supported him. Then she got kicked out, and now she's written a book. You would not know, and I wouldn't know her name, Omarosa, if it weren't for Donald Trump. She wouldn't have any fame if it weren't for Donald Trump. Wouldn't have any notoriety, wouldn't have any fortune, and she's going to have even more fortune once she sells the book. Without Donald Trump. And this is who she is. Her character is, that's the first dude she thought to screw when it came to her public image and reputation. I've got Sean Spicer on, the former press secretary, when we come back. We talk about Omarosa. We talk a lot about Jim Acosta and Sarah Sanders. It's an interview you're going to want to hear. Coming right up, right here on The Weekend with Joe Pags. Stay here.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
Great radio stations across the land, JoePags.com, all the social media there, plus the live video stream. Also, the Blaze Radio Network. It's The Weekend with Joe Pags. Glad to have you along for the ride. And really glad to have back on Sean Spicer. He, of course, was the press secretary for President Donald Trump, the first press secretary. It didn't go so well. He's written a book about it now. Sean, I appreciate you coming on. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, really glad to have you back, my man. I wanted everybody to go and get this book. It's called The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. And last time I had John, man, we had a great reaction, and I appreciate you taking the time. I know that you're traveling around, and you're in an airport, and you're doing all sorts of stuff, so I appreciate you squeezing us in.
Well, I know how important your audience is, a loyal bunch of folks that like to stay informed, and so there's nowhere I'd rather be than with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, my man. All right, so I have to go here. I know that you've been watching this, and everybody who's on Twitter sees this, and I know that you read a lot and you keep yourself very informed. Sarah Sanders, who succeeded you in the job, has been, I think, even treated worse than you were, and I think you were treated pretty badly. And for some reason, it's okay to follow her and her family into restaurants and boo her down and call her a liar. She's the first press secretary that has Secret Service now agents following her and her family. Any comment on how she's been treated now that you're out of the job? And I know that you weren't treated right at all, but did you see it ramp up even after you left?
Yeah, to some degree I did. I mean, look, I write in the book several issues that I had or things that happened to me, but there's no question about it that Sarah's treatment and clearly the threats have exceeded anything that I felt. They don't give you a Secret Service detail for fun.
Yeah.
These are, you know, officer trained agents who, you know, spend a lifetime making sure that senior government officials are protected in the executive office of the president. So they didn't do this because it was something, you know, good to do. They gave it to her because of the threats. And the thing that I find fascinating about your question is that there has been little, if any, concern exhibited by, I mean, they're not, it is the media treatment of her that generally drives this.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how often it's all about them. And it's a very one-sided discussion. Look, I don't think that no one should have violence or intimidation used against them for expressing themselves.
Right.
She is a government service. I don't believe folks in the media. I don't want to see any of them, whether you're on the far left of the media or not.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone should be threatened for expressing themselves. What makes our country great is our ability to do that, to recognize that we have various beliefs and philosophies and positions, and that, you know, the same way that people will defend, people who don't agree with them because they cherish the First Amendment.
Right.
But the idea that we are now seeing this, and again, I talk about in the book the instances that happened to me, but it pales in comparison to what happened to Sarah. And watching these guys, not once have I seen any of them sort of do that story about how, you know, this is a first, and it's sad to see this happen. They don't really seem to express concern about what's going on with her as much as they do about themselves.
It's a very interesting take, and I think that you're spot on. It's Sean Spicer. The name of the book is The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. I mean, at first it looked like it was sort of tongue-in-cheek and kind of fun when April Ryan accused Sarah Sanders of not baking a pie that she brought in or said that she baked. I mean, I thought, okay, they're just kidding around. But it turns out she really wanted her to prove that she baked the pie. I mean, it's so contentious and so, like, Sam Donaldson.
But it's also petty, right?
Right.
I mean, that the idea that Sarah would lie about baking, I mean, that's just, I know that the idea that, Joe, that we are even talking about this
right.
is ridiculous.
No, no,
but
it is.
It's true. The idea that right now the press is basically trying to say, like, think about that. And they, none of them, here's the problem. And I talk about this over and over in the book. Here's my biggest issue. None of them will call each other out, right? So in any other industry, if there was another talk show host that was saying or doing things that you thought, you know what, look, I have great dialogue, I'm respectful on my show,
right.
and look at what this guy's doing, you'd call it out and say, that person doesn't represent the profession that I love.
Right.
These guys, when they act like they do, none of them call each other out. I saw one piece in The Atlantic the other day, which is just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I must have missed the copy editors that called out Jim Acosta and said that his behavior and his antics are bad for the industry. And
yeah.
I'm sad. I can't believe I'm giving The Atlantic of all outlets any kind of credit. But it was also an opinion piece, so
yeah.
it's not like it was them. But this idea that it's always about them and that they don't call out any of these bad antics or behavior or lines of questioning and say that's really not appropriate for what we as journalists stand for is sad to me.
It's almost like they don't get the relationship. It's Sean Spicer, The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. That's his book. Go and get it. It's flying off the shelves. Something has changed, and I brought up Sam Donaldson a second ago. He used to be the guy that would really be sort of a stickler when it came to Ronald Reagan. They would go back and forth, but by the end of it, they would sort of chuckle it off, and Sam would do his reporting, and the president would continue being the president. Later, when I interviewed Sam Donaldson, he said the relationship actually got much better because he got what I was trying to do. He did it with class. He did it with some humor. Today, Acosta really does want it to be about him. April Ryan wants it to be about her.
He's making all the rounds in the late night shows.
Right,
He's trying to make his antics about the First Amendment and about the freedom of the press, which it's not. It's getting up. Look, the difference between Donaldson and Acosta is that, frankly, at the end of the day, Sam Donaldson was also known for getting stories and
Absolutely.
For breaking news. Acosta, name the last time that Jim Acosta has actually broken any piece of news or headlined a story. It doesn't happen.
It doesn't.
The reason you know Jim Acosta is because he waves his hands and he yells loud and he makes a scene. That's it. So, you know, if you want to, if that is your standard for what a good journalist is now, then there he is. But I don't think that was what I always was growing up thinking what someone who goes into journalism is all about.
Right. The name of the book is The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. This is Sean Spicer. I was a journalist for many, many years. I remember for 14 or 15 years as a TV news anchor and a reporter and having won many awards, I never once did a story about me. Never once was I mean, the only thing I would say about me was my name at the end when I tossed it back or my name in the beginning when I introduced the program that I was on. I don't get if he's trying to be a star, he's trying to become an actor, he wants to be a singer like Joe Scarborough. I'm not sure I understand what it is that he's getting at.
To me, this is an audition.
Look, really?
Here's the thing, Joe, you just mentioned it. If you're part of the reason I left the job, and I write about this very, you know, at length in the book, is that as a press secretary, you're never supposed to be the story.
Yeah.
And I write very, you know, clearly that over time, I too often became the story. My solution was to step down and say to the president, look, you need a clean slate. I can't. I have, unfortunately, for a lot of reasons, not. But to your point, the journalist should not be the story,
right?
And unfortunately, it's now all about him in particular. And some of these other ones are not too far behind either.
And by the way, he loves that we're talking about him, but I've got to talk about him because I think that the American public are starting to get who he is, and he is exactly who you're describing him to be. The name of the book is The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President, Go and Get It. So let's talk specifically about that event. The president has said consistently, fake news is the enemy of the people. Fake news is a problem. We've got to correct it. Fake news is trying to direct the narrative. So for some reason, he does another tweet storm, a Twitter storm over the weekend or something. Sarah Sanders now has to answer to Acosta, going right at her, demanding now, I demand you say that the news media is not the enemy of the people or are not the enemy of the people. And he's really put, you have to say it. Well, Sarah, you just said all that. You still didn't say that we're not the enemy of the people. I deserve better. We deserve better. We should be respected. And she goes down a litany, a list of how she's been treated and the horrible things that were done at the correspondence dinner and when she tried to have some food with her family. And Acosta, oh, I'm really sorry that happened, but you still didn't tell me that I'm not great. So what is he trying to elicit? He's not going to get her to say those words. Does he think that he's showing himself to be a victim to the people? And should she have just walked in? Sean, can you as the press secretary just turn around and walk away? Because at some point, I just want her just to walk away from this guy.
Look, I think that's what he wants, though. And again, part of this is, to your question, he wants to be the story. So he wants to immediately go on air and, again, not report about issues and policies that are affecting the American people, but yeah. He wants to go on and report about him and say, when I questioned Sarah Sanders about me, here's what she said or didn't say about me.
Yeah.
So he, you know, this is the most fascinating thing, that you've got this, you know, so-called reporter who has made himself the entire story. And everything now is consuming about how, you know, whether how he's being treated, how he's being respected. What it's not about the issues. It's not about the policies. It's not about the announcements. It's about him. And I think that's the thing that I find most fascinating is the fact that other reporters are saying, you know what, like, we need to get the focus back onto the issues, not on us.
Imagine they actually reported stuff. That'd be weird. The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. His name is Sean Spicer. Sean, this interview really is about you, even though we've talked mostly about Jim Acosta, which he'll be happy about. But I've got to ask you, and I didn't ask you this the first time I interviewed you. If you had the opportunity, would you go back and do it again and do it differently, or would you not do it to begin with?
I would go back and do it differently. I think obviously I've learned a lot during my time, but there's the difference. Just to be clear, if I went back in time, would I do it again? Yes, I thought it was an honor to a privilege to serve the country.
Right.
Would I go back now and do it again for a second time? Absolutely not.
Yeah. Like, right. So if he called you right now and said, come back, you'd say, I'm good.
I'd say, Mr. President, you know how this is going to end. We already went through this. Thank you. I'd love to help you in a lot of other ways and serve this country, but I don't think this is the best.
I want to throw you a curveball, and if you don't have an opinion because you don't know much about it, that's fine. But this Omarosa has written a book now, and I guess she is telling people, allegedly, that she secretly recorded the president. Any thoughts on that? I mean, people like Michael Cohen and Omarosa.
I got to tell you, I am utterly disgusted.
Yeah.
I think that on so many levels, it is delusional and it is disloyal and it is disgusting. And I can't begin to enumerate this because, number one, the idea that you were taping the president of the United States, that you were using a position of power and trust, I don't know the law. That's not my area, but I got to imagine that there's got to be something that you did that's not legal about that. Number two, it's unbelievably disloyal. And number three, from the snippets that I've read, it's delusional. The bottom line is, by her own admission, she tried to run back into the residence to save her own job.
Right.
Once she got fired, then it became like, now she's going to do this whole story about why he's not, you know, he's got problems. He is the only one who's got problems and who has an issue is her.
And I'm glad you said that. I'm aware of her because I used to watch The Apprentice, Sean. And on that show, she was on there for so many weeks because she kept lying her face off. Now it was reality TV, and he's had her as part of the team for a long time and gave her every opportunity. She has fame, she has fortune, she has notoriety because of Donald Trump. You mentioned the word loyalty. That's one of the most important things to this man. I mean, he's got to be – this has really got to hurt him. Like emotionally.
I don't know that it hurts him in the sense that, I mean, I think that I think it speaks to him that despite her previous comments and acts and lack of performance, he allowed her to come into the White House as a trusted aide. I think that's probably a little bit hurtful, but I don't think that it took a lot to realize that that's who she's always been.
I got you. It's Sean Spicer. The name of the book is The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. Last question, is the tour slowing down, or are you still like nonstop doing stuff like this?
I'm here in Orlando. We drive to Southern Florida today, later this afternoon. Then I go back up to D.C. I see my wife and kids for the first time in 15 days,
oh, man.
Which I'm not only excited for, I think my wife is ecstatic that I'll be coming home. But then I'm back on the road. I've got a couple events in the D.C. area on Monday, and I'm up in Philadelphia and then New York the rest of the week. So in Arizona over the weekend. So this is going to be nonstop for a few more weeks. But I love doing this. I love the reason I wrote the book was to be able to talk about my experience. Not just at the White House, but the RNC and ever. So I'm having a blast doing it, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners about, you know, what was going on, and hopefully give them an opportunity to get a front row seat to the last few years of history by reading the book.
I really appreciate Sean Spicer taking the time again, and to get the update on what his thoughts are on Omarosa, I thought was really key, and I'm glad that he was able to go there. Your thoughts on what you just heard? It is 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, JoePags.com. We're coming right back on the weekend. My pleasure to have you here. It's the weekend with Joe Pags. 1-800-501-7080. JoePags.com. That's where all the social media is. You can also click on Find a Station. Send me your zip code. We'll see if we have one there. And, the live video stream is there, too. Now, I do the show at a specific time Saturday. Some of the stations get it on Sunday. That's great. I'm cool whenever it runs. The live stream repeats itself until I do another live stream. So if you missed any part of it, you can go back and check it out there as well at JoePags.com. We go to the phone lines, 1-800-501-7080. Get your thoughts on what we've been talking about today so far. It's Heather, who is in New York. Hi, Heather. What's going on?
Hey, Joe, first of all, you rock, and I wanted to let you know, last weekend you were talking about that you have no stations in New York. You are Saturdays up in northern New York, right? Literally the St. Lawrence River and Canada separates us, but anyway.
I'm with you. I'm actually, I'm on Saturdays. I'm on in Rochester and Syracuse and Albany and all that, but during the week, I'm not.
Like, we're way higher than that, but anyway, I just want to let you know that are up here,
you.
And you're wonderful. I wish you were on all week, but.
Thank you. Yeah, well, tell the station. Tell them to put me on.
But I just wanted to ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
I don't understand how the Democrats could impeach Donald Trump when Paul Ryan said they couldn't impeach Rod Rosenstein because that's for misdemeanors and high crimes. I'm getting that they're hoping the Russian investigation finds him and all that crap, and that's why they're going to impeach him. But how can they do it if it comes out clean?
Well, they can't impeach him. There's nothing impeachable here. There's absolutely nothing impeachable. Even if he would have looked at Jim Comey and said, hey, are you going to stop this with General Flynn now? That's still not impeachable. There's nothing whatsoever that's impeachable. And I was talking yesterday with somebody, and Heather, I wonder what you think about this. They don't really want to impeach him. They just want to keep, well, actually, it was Bill O'Reilly that I was talking to. They don't want to impeach him. They just want the idea of impeachment to continue, at least through the midterms and maybe through the 2020 election, to make it look like he's unelectable again. So it's not really about impeaching because they have nothing.
That makes more sense to me because every time I hear Maxine Waters say impeach 45, I'm like, what are you going to impeach him on? Like, he's done nothing wrong.
Nothing.
Okay, so I guess they're trying to just keep their base happy until...
Well, if they keep on saying impeach him, then they're hoping that people who voted for him the first time won't vote for him, and maybe they can switch some votes to vote for the other side. Well, look, he's sullied, he's no good, he's obviously going to be impeached. If they could have impeached him, Heather, they would have done it by now.
And just on your last interview about Omarosa, the name of her book should be for her. She's unhinged, because I did watch her on Your Apprentice Like You. She does lie to her chief. I don't know why he held her over, and I wouldn't expect anything less from her than to write a book about the president. She's
well, Heather, I appreciate that.
Crap.
What is the name of the radio station that you're listening to me on?
WQTK in Austin,
I will get a hold of them.
New York.
I will get a hold of them. I appreciate you, Heather. Thanks so much.
Thanks
it's a great radio
great
station.
Day.
You too. It's a great radio station. I believe I've spoken with them before. And again, right, when I say that I'm on not on any stations in New York, that's during the week, Monday through Friday. Although, looks like we're close to adding one. We had a couple, but they went dark and they switched formats and whatever else. And it's the state of my birth, so it'd be kind of nice to get back on there. Let me go back to the phone lines and say hello and welcome to Frank, who is in Florida. Frank, you got about a minute or so. What's happening?
Hey, nothing much there, bud. I'm just calling like the last caller. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
We don't get you only but once a week on Saturdays. And I don't do the streaming or whatever they call it because I'm too old.
Where are you in Florida? I'm on four different stations in Florida. Where are you?
I'm in Brooksville. I think it's WJIB or something, WXIB.
I think it's WJXB. Yeah, I'll get a hold of them and see if we can't do something during the week too, Frank.
Yeah,
what's on your mind?
Look, you're doing a good job, pal.
Thank you.
And I agree with everything you're saying.
Thanks.
It's just a shame what they're doing. And I'll tell you, but you know what? Trump is going to do what he does. He won't buckle onto these people. And all he's doing is strengthening his base.
I agree.
I agree.
I we're not going to turn our backs on them, that's for sure. And they keep on thinking that we're going to. What did you think about Omarosa coming out?
Let him keep talking because you know what? He'll be a two-term president.
What did you think about Omarosa?
I didn't know much about her until I talked to your producer. But what a jerk. She's probably a multimillionaire because of Trump. And then
Without a doubt, she either is or will be a millionaire because of him. No, I agree with you. Because of him, she has fame, fortune, and now has a book coming out. It's all because of him. That's the irony of the whole thing. It's 1-800-501-7080, 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. We come back. It's going to be Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott. Stay here.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Across America, it's The Weekend with Joe Pags. To talk to Joe, call 800-501-7080. And now, The Weekend. Here's Joe Pags.
Hey, great radio stations all over. JoePags.com, all the social media there. The Blaze Radio Network, it is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Glad to have you along for the ride. You know, big story happened this past week that I don't think got the appropriate coverage. I know, it's hard to believe. I think the mainstream or the legacy media did something incorrectly. I know that's very hard to swallow, but that's really where I'm coming from. But let's be real. You got a story out in the desert of New Mexico where allegedly there's a radical Islamic idiot training young people to perform school shootings. Human bones were found on the property. There was some custody dispute. And I think it's gotten very little coverage. It's gotten some coverage. But that would be the biggest story on planet Earth if I were the news director or the managing editor at these networks. You got a Second Amendment component. You know, they're always going nuts about that. You've got a school shooting component. You've got a child custody component. You've got law enforcement officers saying that the conditions there at this compound or tent or wherever the hell it was were worse than they've ever seen, ever in all their years doing law enforcement. You got that. You got terrorism in the middle of New Mexico. And it just doesn't appear to be getting the cover. So listen, I wanted to get some insight from somebody who I know is an expert on terrorism law and on terrorism. It is Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott. He's the director for the Center for Terrorism Law at St. Mary's University, also the author of Radical Islam Why. And I had to get with it. Jeff, appreciate you. What's going on?
Hey, it's another great day in America.
Well, it really is. But we've got a story that came out of New Mexico that as the details come in, I thought to myself, you got to get a hold of Jeff Atticott because this is a very strange situation. Hear the details as I know them, and you may have more details, and I know that you've got some ideas on what was going on, but You got a guy who somehow is related to a person who advised the blind sheikh or something that was this guy Rahman, who was involved in the World Trade Center attack in 1993 when they weren't successful. I mean, they blew it up, but they didn't knock it down. It turns out he's some radical Islam guy, allegedly, in the middle of the desert in New Mexico, and he's training kids to be school shooters. What? So, Jeff, when you hear a story like this, because of your knowledge of terrorism and terrorism law, what's the first thing you think? Did you know all this up front once you started to get the details? What do you think?
Well, yeah, you kind of, you know, terrorism emits from various sources, and this guy looks like he's coming from the brand of radical Islam. The FBI has been watching him for some time now, and, you know, he's in a compound. Now, many of these people use our freedoms against us, freedom of speech, freedom of religion.
Yeah.
And but it's always suspicious when you get a bunch of people in a compound and you kind of, you know, go off the net. Not illegal, but, you know, there's smoke there, obviously. And other things are alleged to have occurred around this fellow, like the disappearance of his son.
Yeah.
From Georgia. They found some, you know, some human remains on the property there in this compound, and they're testing out to make sure it's, you know, it's not his son, or is it his son?
Yeah.
Apparently, he thought his son was possessed by a devil, and he's, you know, took steps to remedy that with his own religious ideas, I suppose. But yeah, the rumor is, and again, he wasn't charged with conspiring to engage in school attacks, but that's some information we've got from a third party that he was training these children, you know, to use assault rifles and other weapons to go in and kill people.
Well, what comes to your mind? Is that something that you think? And again, it's Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott. His book is Radical Islam Why. Go and get it. Radical Islam Why. Jeff, is this a tactic that you've ever heard, where they would train, you know, young people to be killers in society to push forward their ideas on Islam?
Oh yeah, do it all the time. Just not in this country so much. It's you know, it's regular fare in the Palestinian territories. They've used children for suicide. You know, murderers,
yeah.
They've used them. ISIS recruited children. I mean, they had children brigades that they were training to do terror attacks. So this is nothing new. It's new to us at this young age. But, you know, it's something that these extremists have done for a very long time. They have no regard for human life. And if you look at the conditions that they kept these children in, law enforcement, one officer said the worst conditions I've seen in my 30 years as a, you know, as a police officer.
Well, what are the legalities of it all? You know, you being the expert that I always turn to for terrorism law, what are the legalities here? Because as you said, if there were not a custody dispute and an alleged kidnapping, they might never have gone in there. They might never have seen this guy was allegedly training school shooters. They may never have seen the deplorable conditions. Does the law have no right, if there's a question about what's happening in that compound, to go and make sure that, at least knock on the door and say, if there was a door, I don't know, there's a bunch of tents, but go there and say, hi, we're just here from the community. We want to make sure the kids are okay.
Well, the FBI had been watching this guy for quite some time, apparently, but they didn't have enough probable cause to go onto the property. So I'm sure they made overtures. May we come on your property? No, you may not. Unless you have probable cause, you can't come on the private property. But what tripped the wire was they got a note that from somebody, from a third party, that
yeah.
The people on the property were starving and needed help, and therefore you use the emergency exception to go in, and that's what they did.
Well, you know that I love the Fourth Amendment. I don't want somebody coming and barging through my door, but, you know, a quick note or a phone call or something, or when somebody leaves the compound, maybe talk to them and say, hey, are the conditions okay there? I mean, because, again, when you've got law enforcement officers that have been on the job for decades who say, I've never seen it this bad, you kind of, I mean, doesn't CPS do welfare checks all the time?
Well, these children apparently are, you know, they're the legitimate children. They're not stepchildren. They're
right.
Not in the foster
okay.
care system. They're children of women that are on the compound and
okay.
men that are on the compound. So, you know, that's their own natural children. And unless you've got probable cause, you can't go on private property unless, of course, the kids are not going to school. You have some other information that they're being abused.
Right. It is Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott, Director of the Center for Terrorism Law, St. Mary's University, also the author of Radical Islam Why. Radical Islam Why. I want you to go and get that. Again, just to reiterate, if it turns out, and we don't know, that this is not something we have directly from authorities, but it's being widely reported now. If it turns out it's like a breeding center for potential murderers, I mean, we've got a problem, Jeff.
We do, and you know, the FBI has told us that they have 1,000 open cases of jihadists, and this is open record material in every 50, on all 50 states, and we have compounds around this country of individuals that are not just radical Islamic extremists, but right-wing extremists, left-wing extremists, and they get in these compounds. They say things that most of us would find very objectionable, but it's not illegal under the First Amendment. What's illegal is to conspire for violence, engage in violence, solicit for violence, or material support act, and that's the difficulty of law enforcement. They've got to, you know, they've got to crack through the shield that these people are hiding behind in a lawful manner, and it's a very difficult job.
Well, it is, and I'm a Constitution lover, and I love our rights, and I don't want them stripped by the government just because they feel like doing it. And you're right; if there was no word that got out that they were actually raising, you know, people who to kill and murder, if that didn't get out, how do you just show up? I get all that, but if there are 1,000 open cases, and there are, and if it's in every one of the 50 states, and it is, what do we do, keeping the balance of our rights, our Constitution in mind, but also keeping in mind that we can't be stupid? What do we do?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing that every administration has said. You know, see something, say something. And somebody obviously said something in this case, because every single terror attack, whether it's come from a right-wing extremist or a radical Islamic extremist or a left-wing extremist, somebody knows something.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the case we had in Austin with the roommates, and that was the case of a criminal terrorist. Somebody knows something. And if you see something, you know, you have an obligation to report it to authorities.
I'm with you. It is Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott. Get his book, Radical Islam Why. Let's switch gears in a big way and talk about Iran. Iran is well, for 8 years, Iran had the upper hand on us because of the president that we had. He gave them $1.6 billion in cash on a cargo jet. I don't know, some sort of a payoff. I have no idea why Obama thought we owed them that. And I guess it was really a payoff to get the nuclear deal done, which was completely weighted against us and for them. And then he freed up $150 billion that was frozen after they went nuts in the 1970s and took our hostages and all that. So they had the run of the joint for 8 years. Now you've got President Trump who says, not going to happen anymore. I'm done with this nuclear deal. You're a bunch of liars. And, you know, Iran's, they're saber-rattling now, oh, we'll wipe you off the map and whatever else. And then at the end of it, the president says kind of what he did with North Korea, but I will sit down with you if you want to fix it. What's going to happen with that? As you watch that, do you like the tactic he's taken?
Yeah, I do. I consider myself a patriot and America first. And this president, that's his agenda. I mean, he has a national security policy that puts our interests first. He's not really, you know, I'm going to look for the world, what's the best interest of the world. It's what's in our best interest. In our best interest, Iran cannot get nuclear weapons. And how do you stop them? With totalitarian regimes, you have to use force, lawful force, or the threat of lawful force. You can't negotiate with these people. And that's just a lesson of history from Chamberlain with the Fuhrer, Adolf Hitler. It just doesn't work. It never works. On the other hand, you know, we're not in a regime change per se. If this regime in Iran will agree that they're going to give up their nuclear program, then, you know, that's something we can talk about. But the president, it worked with the Koreans, the North Koreans. They're not shooting any more missiles. It's not working as fast as some people might want it to work. But it's the real world we have to live in, not, you know, fantasy island. And the real world is we've got individuals that mean to do us harm, and this president knows how to deal with them. I think he's demonstrated that brilliantly in the last 2 years.
Well, for 6 or 7 years under George W. Bush, I think that we would agree they were shaking in their boots. With 8 years of Obama, they went, whoa, this guy ain't going to try to stop us at all. In fact, he's given us everything that we want. Do you think that they're going to get back in line now because they see that Trump has no problem pressing, well, making the call and saying, let's drop some bombs on Syria? Are they not sure? Have they not tested him enough yet? What's the mindset of a mullah over there running Iran?
Their biggest mindset is how do we stay in power, because the people in Iran are suffering. They're, you know, you talk about human rights abuses and women's rights and all the money we sent there. That's not going down to the people. It went to the pockets of the mullahs and other people in the Republican Guard.
Right.
And I think as you start to squeeze them economically, you'll see a true, you know, resistance from the people in the country that they don't want this type of government. They don't want a tyranny. They want greater human rights. They want greater freedom in terms of goods and services. And I think that's the president's strategy, not to go to war, but to use our economic might to squeeze them.
It's Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott, Director of the Center for Terrorism Law at St. Mary's University. His book is Radical Islam, Why? Last question, Jeff. For the longest time, the legacy media in this country made us think Syria was the biggest story on planet Earth. Haven't heard anything about Syria in quite some time. Do you know what's going on in Syria?
Yeah, well, the bottom line is the president achieved a brilliant victory in his first year in office when he destroyed ISIS. And that's why we don't have the number of jihadists across the globe have diminished tremendously from Europe or in this country.
Right.
Because President Bush has killed, he destroyed the beehive. And so the bees are, you know, not congregating like they used to.
Right.
Syria, we've got stability. And Assad, you know, this president's tune is not regime change. And, you know, if Assad will maintain a system that doesn't threaten the United States, then, you know, it's not really our job to be the police officer of the world. And Assad's a bad guy, but there's a lot of bad guys in the world, and we have stability in Syria right now, and I think that's our goal, and that's what should be our goal, is stability. And
the name of the book is Radical Islam, Why? Radical Islam, Why? His name is Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott. You got to go and grab that book. He's the director for the Center for Terrorism Law at St. Mary's University. Very interesting take on the situation in New Mexico. Interesting that we're not hearing anything about Syria and what's going to happen with Iran. Your thoughts when we come back, 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. Stay right here. Great to have you. It's the weekend with Joe Pags. 1-800-501-7080. I just posted my interview with Sean Spicer over on my Facebook page. If you missed any part of it, if you want to share it, you can go check it out again. It is at joepags.com, joepags.com, and click on Facebook, and it's the last item that I posted there. Go check it out. Go kick it around. Go see it. All right. Your thoughts on what you just heard from Jeffrey Atticott, Lieutenant Colonel out of St. Mary's University. The director for the Center for Terrorism Law, also a great author. You know, this story is humongous out of New Mexico. And is it unique? Are there more of these camps elsewhere? And it's kind of scary when you say, well, is this something that you're surprised to hear? Is this something that radical jihadists do? Oh, no, they do it everywhere. They've been using kids as suicide bombers and killers for a long time. It's what they do. It's scary to think about. And it was in, did I mention New Mexico? New Mexico is not in the Middle East somewhere. That's not far away from us. It's here in this country. Scary. 1-800-501-7080-JoePags.com. Let me go to the phone lines. I've got Angie, who's been holding in Washington, to talk about something off the beaten path, but that's okay. We can do that, Angie. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Joe. Hey.
Hi.
Nice to speak with you again. Hey,
good to talk to you.
I just wanted to bring up a point. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. I think if Trump's a racist, he's really bad at it since African-American unemployment's lowest, same with Hispanic and Asian. He doesn't like to fail.
Well, I'm with you, and I got to tell you, that's a very, very appropriate line. If he's a racist, he's really bad at it. That's a very smart line.
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving this. I've got more money than I've ever had since, you know, for a long time. And, you know, business is booming. I see now hiring signs everywhere. I'm loving it. It's just this investigation crap kind of sucks. Wish they could put an end to that, but I don't think they will, but I don't know. What's your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that you're right on, and I appreciate it, Angie, out of Washington. The unemployment rate is extremely low, lowest we've ever seen for black folks, for Hispanic folks. The unemployment rate is continuing to go down. Jobs continue to come in. Hopefully, we'll start seeing a real bump in the workforce participation number, where more people are getting, you know, out of wherever it is they're hiding and maybe on entitlements, and they're actually back going to work. I want to see that number jump a lot. But yeah, employment in this country is incredible right now. So much better than it was just 2 years ago. and you're thinking, but he's helping to create jobs for everybody who's in America. Thought he was a racist. You can't do that, Kenny. Doesn't make any sense. Or maybe it's easier to call somebody a racist than actually examine the facts according to the individual situation that you're complaining about. Let's talk about jobs. Let's talk about Omarosa. Let's talk about all the... If he's a racist, why does he keep on doing such non-racist things? Such an oddball. Hey, when we come back, it's going to be Dinesh D'Souza, movie maker, author. Latest movie called Death of a Nation. His wife, Debbie, will be on with him as well. She sings in the movie. You're not going to want to miss it. I just saw this movie. It's incredible. Keep it here. Coming back.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.
Hey, great radio stations across the land, JoePags.com, the Blaze Radio Network. It is The Weekend with Joe Pags. Glad to have you along for the ride. Really, really glad to have back on the program Dinesh D'Souza, movie maker, author, lecturer. His lovely wife, Debbie, is with him as well. Talking about Death of America, or Death of a Nation, I should say. Death of a Nation, which is his latest film. Debbie sings in the film again. And I just watched it a couple of nights ago. You get a great education. Guys, really, really glad to have you back on. How are you?
Great. We're happy to be on the show.
Good to see you. We actually get to see you.
Yeah, we actually get to see you. This is wonderful. I love this. Now, Dinesh knows this already, but Debbie, I'll make sure because he probably didn't tell you. I had him on like twice last week, but I was like, Dinesh, if we want the ratings, we have to have Debbie.
No, he never tells me.
I love having you both. I love our friendship, and I so love the work that you do. Death of a Nation is the movie. It's in theaters right now. It's doing very, very well if you're in the audience. If you're somebody who rates movies, you hate it. Dinesh, let's start there. I mean, how is that possible that it's zero from Rotten Tomatoes, 90% from the audience?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen such a widespread for a movie. Normally, the critics and the audience don't always agree, but they run kind of in tandem. Now, let's remember, though, that here the critics' rating is based on 11 guys. 11 guys.
Is
that what it is? That's it. Whereas the audience reviews is based on 3,000 plus reviews. In other words, 54 online pages of reviews, 5 stars after 5 stars. So the audience obviously loves this movie. The critics are obviously lying about it. And so I feel very good about this. It really shows me that when these progressive critics see the movie, it's 90 minutes of punches to them in the stomach. No wonder they have a little ideological indigestion at the end. They're in a really bad mood. They give it a zero. That tells me I'm actually doing my work.
It is Dinesh and Debbie D'Souza, the new book and movie, Death of a Nation. You actually dared, Dinesh, to morph President Donald Trump's face with the beloved President Abraham Lincoln, that many people in this day and age think was a Democrat, which he wasn't. He was a Republican. You dared do that. Did you know you were going to be triggering a lot of people when you did it?
Yes, very much so. And the reason for doing it is not just to be provocative for its own sake. It is actually to show that the situation of today, if you're trying to find an historical similarity or parallel, you've got to go to 1860. You can't go back to the Reagan era because that was an era of gentlemen's politics. Reagan would be a little bit of a fish out of water today. But Lincoln wouldn't, because the waters in Lincoln's time were even more royal than they are now. So in 1860, you had an outsider, a Republican, elected in a close election, yeah, somewhat unexpected. All hell breaks loose from the moment he's elected. It's something that's very familiar to our own time.
Yeah, it's interesting because the comparisons are real. Nobody who's a millennial or who's an Antifa or BLM or any of these idiotic groups, nobody realizes that that's how it really went. They really do think that he was somehow the father of the Democratic Party and you had to stop the evil Republicans. It was exactly the opposite way around. And I took one of the lessons from your previous book, The Big Lie, and I used it on my show. And a guy called in and said, I've never, ever thought about it that way. You're so right. What I said was the Civil War wasn't about North versus South. It was the Republicans who beat the Democrats and people like a light went off. Are you finding that audiences are starting to get it and starting to understand that this is real history that they just weren't taught?
I think if audiences, and particularly minorities, young people see this movie, they'll be blown away. This is, by the way, why, Joe, the mainstream media is pretending the movie doesn't exist. Yeah. Like right now, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, they will not say one word about the movie. Why? Because they know if people see it, they're going to actually see history and present day information on the big screen, irrefutable. I mean, here are Nazis who are making laws and they have in their hands the democratic laws of the Jim Crow South. They're crossing out the word black, writing in the word Jew. And this is based on actual historical transcripts. But, you know, we aren't taught this. It's not in our textbooks. It's not on the History Channel. So we're actually producing, you may say, secret history, right? It's a history that people don't know. But there it is on the big screen. And so it's liberating for people to see this movie. I just wish we could have a genuine national debate about it. But we live in times where that's not likely to happen.
Go to deathofanationmovie.com, put in your zip code, find out where it's playing. Debbie isn't sitting there only to increase my ratings. You're also sitting there because you, like in Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party, you sang God Bless America in that, and I think you stole the show. It was amazing. You sing again in this movie. I want to give people, if you don't mind, you might not have expected this, but I've got a piece of video, and I'm going to give people just a taste of it. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
All right, this is Debbie D'Souza singing in the movie, and we get to see you sing in the movie as well.
Be true to thee, true to thee. I will be.
Oh. Now, I'm going to be mean. I'm only going to give them a taste. I'm only going to give them like 10 seconds. So I want them to go see the movie, see you sing the song. Which song is that, by the way?
Well, it's a Celtic woman song called O America.
Okay.
And it was done back in 2009. And I loved it so much that, you know, I've been singing it since 2009, you know, different patriotic events and whatnot. And so Dinesh thought it would be a really great song to put in this movie. But I have to say, and I don't know, honey, if it's okay to say, it was really tough to get it because the people that did this song are left wing.
Oh, wow.
So, So even God Bless America was a struggle to get in the movie because we just, you know, again, we don't have the entertainment industry on our side. So we have to fight to get these songs played in our movies.
It's a beautiful moment in the movie because we have just laid out the kind of deep horror of what the Democrats today represent, which is a fascist streak today, an institutionalized racism that you see on the Democratic plantation. So it's that part in the movie where you now need the audience to step back and to lift them up and inspire them to not to give up on America, but actually to get involved.
Yeah. That happened in the movie that I mentioned earlier as well. You're watching that movie thinking how horrible this all is. And then Debbie comes in, sings God Bless America, and you're like, it's like a ray of sunshine. Uh-huh. And I'm not kissing up. I mean, it just truly is. The movies are so well done, and the inclusion of you lifting us up again, by the end, we walk out feeling better about America again. It's Dinesh D'Souza, his wife Debbie. Go to deathofanationmovie.com. Debbie, if you don't mind, can I go to your homeland for a second, where you're from? And this is your homeland now, but can we go to Venezuela for a second?
Yes, absolutely, sure.
And I don't think she's Venezuelan. I think she might be Puerto Rican. But this Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is walking around. She's young. She's cute. Doesn't know anything about anything. Anytime anybody asks her a question about something, she's wrong. But right. Having said that, she has a lot of people in this country believing that socialism is the way. You got to be more like Venezuela. You have to be. Bernie Sanders is right. And then she says dumb stuff like, if you have two jobs, that lowers the unemployment rate, which it doesn't. And then she says stuff like, let's turn those seats red, which she doesn't really want. But having said that, she has people believing that where you came from is some sort of beacon. Help me understand this.
Well, I have to say, yesterday I saw a photograph of a newborn baby dead. So many babies are dying in Venezuela, in the Venezuelan hospitals right now as we speak. People can't find food. People are eating their pets. That's what socialism is. And, you know, it's really funny because New York Times and a lot of, you know, left-wing publications blame oil on what's happening to Venezuela. And even the regime right now, the Maduro regime, is blaming the opposition, the right-wing opposition, saying that it was their policies that destroyed Venezuela. And for 20 years, they've been trying to fix it. So, you know, does that sound familiar? The left blaming the right for something the left is actually doing?
I mean, we think of Venezuela as a poor country, but it used to be a prosperous country.
It was a beautiful country. It was prosperous. For us, in fact, I was better off in Venezuela than I was when I came to America, living in the barrio of South Texas.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just I just can't even believe somebody would say socialism is a good thing. I would like for them to go to Venezuela, walk the streets, see these babies dying in the hospitals, you know, see the desperation of people lining up for hours to get food, to get any kind of nourishment in their bodies. People are losing 20, 30 pounds a year because they can't eat.
And you're not being figurative about any of this. All this is literal. They're eating their pets. Their babies are dying. And you told me last time that the government actually is cutting everybody in line, taking stuff for themselves and their family. And if there are morsels left, you know, have at it. Kill yourselves trying to get it.
Absolutely. Maduro is becoming extremely wealthy. Hugo Chavez died a billionaire. And this is all happening on the backs of these people. 1.5 million people left Venezuela this year alone.
Wow.
They're coming out, so they have no more workforce left. So, it's horrific what's happening in Venezuela.
Yeah, I would have no idea how they could turn it around, but I pray that they somehow can. And I want to relate it back to the movie, Death of a Nation, movie.com. Go there, put in your zip code, go see this movie. It's amazing. Dinesh, I mean, are we on the road to that? When you say death of a nation, it doesn't make me feel good. Do we walk away from the movie saying our nation's going to die, or do we feel like we could turn this thing around?
No, we the reason for using that title is because it links with a movie shown 100 years ago by Woodrow Wilson, the progressive Democrat in the White House, Birth of a Nation. And as far as the progressives were concerned, they were starting America all over again. They didn't like the America of the founding. They wanted to found a new country based on racism. Racism and ethnic exploitation were the core. So my view is that if that progressive racist ideology is allowed to play itself out, it will kill America in the sense of killing what's distinctive about America. But okay. The movie is a call to action. It's a call to being informed, to fire people up, to get involved in the midterms, to participate in politics, because we can avert the death of a nation. We can actually save America.
Deathofanationmovie.com. Go there, find out where it's playing. Get to a theater this week and go check it out. I've got to ask you this, and I didn't tell you that this was going to happen, but you've always rolled with me. President Trump's approval ratings are going up. They're 50%, 51%, much higher than Barack Obama at the same time in his first term. And it turns out black folks and Hispanics are helping to prop that number up. Some black people are actually coming out. Well, minorities in general are coming out. And they're saying, you know, I kind of like my paycheck. I kind of like the economy. It's almost like the promises that you and I have talked about that were made to black folks in the 30s and 40s that got them to vote from Democrat to Republican, or from Republican to Democrat, I should say, it now has them going the other way. Are you seeing, am I reading that right or not?
I think that there is a, we're seeing in Latino communities, in black communities, and Asian American, there's a kind of awakening going on, and it's slow. It takes a little while to get root.
Yeah.
But in the past, remember, by and large, we would only have isolated black intellectuals who are on the conservative side, but not people with any following or backing.
Yeah.
You should see the kind of people we see in the movie theater, the kind of people who show up even at our premiere. And these are young black guys, and they're fired up by Trump. And because I think they recognize that at the end of the day, what they need is ladders of opportunity and not a rope of dependency where the Democrats are on top of a tall building. Hang on to the rope. We'll pull you up. I think blacks are beginning to see where that's gotten them over the past 75 years.
And are more people coming around to the fact that, in fact, that your belief in history and what you've been taught is almost exactly opposite of what really happened? Are people realizing that?
That's going to be a slow process because, as you know, the left dominates academia, the media. Even though, for example, I blow up the whole Charlottesville white supremacists are on the right narrative in the movie, but there's dead silence about it in the mainstream media. And some of these white nationalists are going to be parading again this weekend in Washington, D.C. And sure enough, you're going to see the replay of the old Charlottesville narrative as if we haven't questioned it, as if we haven't undermined it.
Yeah.
It's like the toy soldier who walks into the wall and keeps going.
It's Dinesh D'Souza, his lovely wife, Debbie, who sings in the movie. You've got to go see Death of a Nation. It is in theaters now. I've seen the premieres, and I've seen the big names that were there. I also have heard from a lot of people that have watched it. Are you getting the kind of traction? Last question. Are you getting the kind of traction that you need for this to spread to even more theaters? Because, again, as you said, as Debbie said, you're not getting the Hollywood backing. You got to do it on your own.
Yeah, I mean, we have to run the ball down the field, and it is a battle because we're not getting the media attention. But that being said, people love the movie. There's an independent polling group called CinemaScore. They interview people who come out of theaters randomly. They make you fill out a survey. We are one of the very few movies that got an A rating, and this is from theatergoers, people who buy tickets. So very proud of that. Very pleased with how the movie is being received.
Really appreciate Dinesh and Debbie D'Souza. The name of the movie is Death of a Nation. Death of a Nation, and you're thinking, well, why do I want to go see a movie called Death of a Nation? Well, I'm here to tell you that it's enlightening. It is historically correct. You're going to learn things that you probably didn't know about this country and about our history, and we probably can get better as a nation. We can pull out of what's happening right now if we just admit who it is that's starting the trouble on the far left, the progressive left, and the historic racists on the left. It's 1-800-501-7080, joepags.com. Coming right back. Stay here. Glad to have you. It's the weekend with Joe Pags. Time for a phone call or two. Glad to have you along for the ride today. Thanks for stopping by. We go to the phone lines. I appreciate you being patient. It's going to be Sam, who's in Rhode Island. Sam, what's going on? Hi.
Hi, Joe. From Radio Free New England on WJJF, I'm listening to you.
And, all right.
God works in mysterious ways. I didn't realize you were going to have Dinesh on again today, but I was going to call in to give my movie review on Death of a Nation.
Okay, cool. I want to hear it.
Well, I thought it was very good. It's sort of like a ramp up on Hillary's America and cleans up a few things. And its finale had a very patriotic choral, and it was very inspiring.
It was wonderful. I thought that the choir did an amazing job.
I loved it. And let's say, on Amorosa, as you were talking earlier, I think she brings a lot more humiliation to the table than she does humility.
Agreed. Absolutely.
And... The DNA is kind of dominated by depravity these days. I was going to say, you know, we have universities of higher education, but I've never heard of a diversity of higher education.
Sam, you're a wordsmith. You're doing a great job here.
Yes, we kind of we pledge to indivisibility, but. They seem to profess more diversity.
You and I agree wholeheartedly, my man. I appreciate you waiting. Appreciate your comments out of Rhode Island. Let me go to Jeff in Reno. Jeff, what's happening? Come on.
Well, hello there.
Hi.
Hey, I appreciate you having the Colonel on, and I just wanted to say I marveled at the fact that he said the FBI was watching that guy in New Mexico, but they couldn't get a look inside the compound to really find out what was going on, and I thought, isn't that something that the FBI can't get a FISA warrant to keep us safe, but they can get a FISA warrant to spy on the Trump campaign?
It's a great point. All they needed to do was have this guy Christopher Steele make a dossier about the guy in New Mexico. Then they could have gone.
Yeah, that would do it. So where are their priorities? That's the question.
Well, it's obvious what their priorities are. It's undermining a duly elected president, Jeff. I appreciate the call, and very, very smart call, too. That's true. I had Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott on, and he said, he's talking about the Fourth Amendment, which I love and I respect. He's talking about the ability of the government to go in and check the welfare of children. Well, if there are no red flags raised, then none are seen. Yet at the same time, there's absolutely nothing pointing to collusion, nothing pointing to any wrongdoing by Trump or his campaign, yet they, for some reason, were able to wiretap Trump Tower because of this Carter Page idiot. They somehow were able to infiltrate his campaign, they say, to protect him. They somehow used a dossier, this bunch of papers stapled together against the president of the United States to get a FISA warrant to surveil somebody living in his complex. And that's okay. You can't do anything about a guy who may have kidnapped his child. Somebody died and they found human bones on his compound and allegedly was training people to be school shooters. I mean, it was a great call. He's exactly 100% right. What's also 100% right is how much I appreciate you taking the time every weekend. Got to get out of here for now. I want to say thanks to Martin and to Nathan. We'll talk to you again next weekend. See ya.
This is The Weekend with Joe Pags.